If you've ever felt like the third wheel, this podcast is for you.
If you love Wheel of Time, this podcast is for you.
If you're bored and have nothing better to do, this podcast is for you.
Join Rob,
Megan,
and Jen
in celebrating the Wheel of Time
and its statistically best fandom
and ridiculous gaming skills
and probably a few cocktails,
and find out which one of them will be the third wheel this time.
This is three wheeling.
That was the most soothing music I've ever heard in my life.
I don't know if you can see Meg and Jen, but all I saw in the background was Ali just sort of like bopping side to side and
enjoying the music. That was such a lovely way to wake up today.
Oh, wonderful.
Wow. That was that music's really nice. I really liked that. 10 out of 10 for the music this morning.
Well, that's it. We're done. The episode is over then. That's it. We've got a 10 out of 10. Easy. So.
Of approval.
Ah, thank you very much. Welcome to episode 2 of Three Wheeling. As you can tell, we are joined by, he hasn't said anything yet, but Ali and Gus.
Hello.
Hello. Yeah.
Welcome. Yeah. Thank you for being our first guest.
We're so excited.
Yeah, we're so sorry. Right? We have been committed to sucking lately.
I'm right there with you.
I've been doing our best work lately.
I take that pledge.
Yeah, but I'm glad you had us on because we often have been told we make people feel like a third wheel. So it's good to, keep it going.
Nice. I get it. Never make us feel, you'll never make me feel like a third wheel.
No, we try actively not to do that.
We are recording this at about 8 something in the morning, our time. And it's funny because we were running late. And then as we sat down, my watch pinged me and said, "You've been falling asleep way later than your target bedtime lately."
And you're like, "No way. Like,
wow, really? I had no idea."
No idea. So, didn't figure that out this morning.
For bearing with us, everybody. You're all very kind people.
Well, I told Rob and Meg before you guys got here that because it's raining in Los Angeles this morning, and everyone knows that you guys have been dealing with flooding. We as well, David and I, have been dealing with flooding. So I was like trying to run up here to get on, I was running out in the backyard to fix the things that had broken off and the rain, because the rain came 2 hours before it was supposed to come. I was like, I'll be done with the podcast before the rain gets here. I'll go out later. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I was out at 5:30 this morning bringing my laundry in.
Here's the thing that people don't understand about LA. There's no infrastructure for rain. There's none. And no one knows how to drive in it. And so it's like the most stressful day. And for no reason. You're like, anywhere else, this would be just a Tuesday or whatever day it is today. It's a Saturday, but it'd be just like a regular day. but then you add rain, and for some reason everyone in LA just falls apart. And I was telling them, and this is so true, when I was an executive and I had back-to-back Zoom meetings in LA, 90% of them would be canceled during the rain. At least 50% would be not happening. And it would
be like a snow day anywhere else. Yeah. It's a rain
day. No one would say it was rain. No one would say that because everyone knows how stupid that sounds. It'd be like, oh, my meetings got pushed back. Like,
I can't
do it today. I'm so sorry. It'd be like a really lame excuse. And then after a while, I just noticed the correlation was it's always when it's raining that my Zoom meetings get canceled. So anyway, we're not a tough people out here.
It's the opposite here. I look out the window, I'm like, oh, wow, it's not raining. That is surprising.
Cancel your meetings.
There's sunshine outside. I better call in sick.
That's right.
Get that vitamin D when you can.
You have to get what you can get, people.
Well, thanks so much for having us, and we didn't cancel on you despite the rain, which makes us really brave. And
we appreciate your bravery.
Thank you.
As I would say on Threefold Talk, ramen rattle. So there's your ramen rattle.
Nice.
Robin rattle.
The long story behind it, Ali. If I start telling you now, we'll be doing it next week still. So it's a very long story behind the ramen rattle.
I like the mystery.
Yeah, it's a sign of G. So there we go. And it's got nothing to do with the books whatsoever. It's entirely a Threefold Talk thing.
Entirely you made that up, and I love that for you. I love that.
Meg, what are you drinking today?
Meg kicks us off with cocktails every week.
Yes, I do. So today, our Wada cocktail, which I think that's what we're coining it as, is Wada cocktail. So.
Yeah.
Is the basil gill. So, So it's a lemon basil martini. So again, just this lemon basil vodka martini is bright and refreshing cocktail that reminds us of one of our favorite innkeepers. So recipe is pretty simple. So in a shaker with ice, you're going to pour 2.5 ounces of basil infused vodka. I have this vodka di Fiori from Total Wine, and it's delicious, about $30 a bottle.
They are not sponsoring us.
Yeah, they're not sponsoring
us. But they may.
Oh, please. Oh my God. I would love it if they would.
But they may.
They may. I'm going to push for that. Okay. That's my new goal in life.
On Wheel Takes, when we accidentally drop a brand, we go, I always like to go, this podcast is brought to you by, and guys goes, it's not.
All right, Meg, you and I need to like work on that then. You know?
Yes. Oh my God. My life would be complete if I could. So 2.5 ounces of basil infused vodka, 1 ounce of lemon juice, and 1 ounce of simple syrup. Shake and strain into a martini glass and garnish with a basil leaf if desired. So
are you showing it to us? Oh, for those people who are watching live.
Nice. Love it. It looks so good.
It does.
It is delicious.
And Rob, are you water cocktailing?
I was trying. So we're going to do like a game later is Never Have I Ever. We play that at the end of the show. And we were thinking about doing the Great Captains. So I was like, I need like an old man drink. Because even the young great captains, you know, give off those old vibes. So I went for something that's port related because I was like, they drink port. That sounds like a great captain sort of drink. And then I wanted some. I just did old port drinks, and a port old fashioned came up. But then I didn't have the ingredients, so I butchered it.
I think you improvised it.
I improvised. There we go. I improvised it. So we have one part port, one part bourbon, and then one part a lemon ginger. Honey simple syrup combination. And then because I need it to last longer when we play the game later, I've topped it with an old style cloudy lemonade and just built it together because they're not going to carry ice around with them when they're off fighting wars, so right. You can't shake their ice or anything like that, so
yeah
that's my excuse. I don't have ice.
A giant mug full of coffee.
Love it.
Nice.
Very, very exciting.
Love that.
Yeah. Because I have to go and rehearse for like 4 hours in a little bit.
I currently have nothing, but now I feel inadequate. Wait. It's good.
To be fair, we did not warn you that we start the show with a cocktail.
No, so. You did. I just totally forgot. Hold on.
It's also 8 in the morning in LA, so.
No judgment.
And I am drinking, Gus, you'll appreciate this, I'm drinking out of my new mug.
Yes, I was looking at that. That's fantastic.
From Pam's Coffee, which is not our sponsor, but they should be. This is a Quentin Tarantino's new coffee shop with Pam Grier all over it and based on the movie Coffee, but next door to the Vista Theater.
Sure.
Which is delightful and now opened and which he now owns. And so I'm drinking my homemade latte. I did not put any simple syrup in this morning, but I did put a drop of rum chata so that I could sort of participate.
Nice.
Yeah.
In the game.
And Allie, what are you drinking?
I got Key Lime LaCroix.
Nice.
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 I won't get drunk, but I might burp, you know?
That's all right. That's good. And the ASMR of opening it on mic was quite nice.
Really, yes. We do like to do that on mic. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because we love to drink LaCroix while we record.
And all the rest of the time.
In case LaCroix would like to sponsor Wheel Takes, the Wheel Takes
Podcast. It's not. Yay! Screaming Spud Monkeys is not cocktailing this morning. Got to save his fortitude for later. And Charlie's a bit poorly, so she's just having a hot Ribena.
Oh,
nice. I feel, speaking of ads, and this is the smallest, I know, I keep doing but I think it's funny. There was a moment where I feel like I made it once we got on Spreaker and started getting ads where you all who live in the Midwest will appreciate this. I've heard an ad on our podcast for O'Reilly's Auto Parts.
Oh my God.
And I felt like I had made it.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I was in the shower listening to my own podcast because I'm a narcissist, and I literally exited the shower and was like,
Meg, right. Let's talk social media. You are a social media sorceress, or as Jen likes to call you, and I will forever beep it out. What do you call it, Jen?
Social media.
It is what that feels like, isn't it? Yeah. A little bit.
I do that podcast every time, so it's only the patrons who will ever know that Jen calls Meg that.
Yes, but it is meant with love. It is meant with love. It is.
All right, Meg, has anything happened this week? I feel like
there's
it's
a lot
busy.
That's happened this week, so I'm going to try to like go through it pretty quick. Okay, so Alexander Wilhelm, who plays Tom, put a photo of himself captioned in that read, enjoyed so much playing Tom in the Wheel of Time. This guy is such a fun character to play. Would you like to see him again? And then obviously, so we know he filmed Tom for season 3, so we will see that. He also filmed a TV show, The Head, with Alvaro Morte, and posted a picture of them together. So I thought
they aren't allowed to do things outside of the Wheel of Time together.
Well, I didn't know if they happened to like be filming in this in a similar location to Wheel of Time. So that's okay, what sure. like kind of brought it to my attention.
Yes, so, yes.
Like, does that mean that Logan and Tom are together, and then that made it easy to film The Head together? Was my question. I don't know.
Interesting. All right.
I did not know they were in this together. I've only just finished season 3 of Vikings, so I need to catch up on other shows that actors are in to catch up. But I'll put it on the list.
Excellent. Okay, I'll keep going. So Maddie posted a photo of her and Ayula sitting on a hill overlooking an ocean amongst a crowd of people. And so they're hanging out offset. Ayula turned 30 this week. So it said last day of season 3, first day of 30. This was what was interesting. So there was, and I put it in our chat. So there's a picture of a whiteboard that says, when you're working on your birthday and everyone is a 10 out of 10, thank you for everyone for all the wonderful, kind and lovely messages. The picture shows a whiteboard with messages and photos. Some of the photos have been covered by Ayula. And then Maddie wrote, happy dirty 30 woman, like something dot, dot, dot. I couldn't read it. Woman, love Mads. And then Rosamund said, so don't worry, 30 comes with a teeny bit more responsibility. So I thought that was cute.
I kind of want to go back and do my 30th again just so I can get that whiteboard worth of stuff.
Yeah.
It's just pretty amazing.
It is a very cool whiteboard.
Yeah.
Like,
also, she posted baby pictures.
Yeah. That's and everybody was posting like birthday messages to her and stuff. And I feel like she went around to a lot of people. And coincidentally, it's now torrential rain here, by the way, folks. I've just looked out my window.
Oh, we manifested that.
Yeah, apparently. So you like, give it all to me, and then you guys can still have your Zoom meetings and things.
Thank you. Because you can handle
I feel like she spent a bit of time going around and thanking people because and I've waited all day. I haven't told Meg or Jen this, but I literally got off the tram going to work at 6:20 this morning, and I received a message from her on Instagram saying thank you so much for wishing me a happy birthday. Yeah. And I'm like, I didn't do anything special, so that can't be just me thing. I feel like she's gone to everyone who posted happy birthday. It's probably sent like a whole bunch of messages out to people.
That's so cute of her.
It's sweet, isn't it? It's adorable. Lovely.
And now I'm really regretting my life choices that I didn't say something. But I think
I know.
I think, I think it's also.
I have met her and talked to her, so that probably helped a snitch. But yeah.
I think that that is clearly her request to be a guest on Threefold Talk.
I mean,
oh, for sure.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely. I'll see if see if we can fit her in. You know, we'll do better.
So. Amazing.
Love that.
Oh, that's great. All right, Meg, what else you got?
God, there's just so much. So,
we need a social media jingle. Social media, social media.
Yes.
No, I mean, I'm just going to cut that out. That'll work, you know. Yeah.
Yeah. Record that, cut that, clip it. Perfect.
Yeah. That was it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
No music needed. Just that.
Raga Ragnars, I'll say it, try it like she does, posted in an Insta Q&A. So someone asked, what TV show or movie do you want to do next? And she said, anything really. I am ready for more work right now. It's been slow for auditions and self-tapes. So if you can throw some magic my way, I would gladly accept it. So that makes me a little bit nervous. Like, is she not filming a ton for what?
Well, they might have. I mean, if she was in the Two Rivers, as we have questioned, then she might have
been done.
They finished up a while ago.
They did, yeah. They were finished in Prague.
You know, and
God, like,
to be fair,
months goes on.
She's not making a ton of money off the show. I mean, like those actors who are in just a few episodes a season are out there self-taping and out there auditioning because
you're always thinking about your next job.
Yep. Yeah. And there's, and there's no work right now. And there's no work right now.
Yeah. It's tough. So yeah, she's not wrong. It's very slow right now.
Yeah.
I feel you, Raga.
Yeah. We all are there with you.
Yes, we are.
Yeah. It's got to be tough. Yosha got himself a dog, I think. Is that last
thing? Got himself a dog. Aww, and then also, yay. So sweet, super cute. I don't know what kind of dog, but almost, is it the Weimaraners that are like the, no, that's not what I'm thinking of. I don't know. But it was like a light brown, short haired dog. Very cute.
I'm very good at identifying dog breeds. I'm like freakishly good. Hold on.
Wow. Okay. I mean, I joke that he should name the dog Asmodian. So
that's like, amazing.
Clearly Asmodian for season 3 is confirmed. So, you know.
Yes. That's perfect.
For sure.
I had to think twice about saying that in front of Ali, and I'm like, no, wait, that's far, far earlier in the book.
I know
who he is, and I know how he goes out.
Yeah. I was like, no, the point Ali is in, he's been and gone. It's just safe to say. It's
the only thing I don't know is who killed him, but I do have my theory, of course.
I remember you have a theory. I don't remember what your theory is.
And no, I'm curious. Yeah.
It's Grendel.
Okay.
It's a whole thing. I was just like, I will solve this. And yeah, the shiver got me. I was like, okay, so that's got to be a clue. And then I went down a theory rabbit hole.
I could just get this on the side. And he's just like, I thought this was Three Weirding, not our podcast.
Y'all do whatever you want.
This week, it's a little of both.
It's a little of both.
I'm the one who's going to have to leave early, so I'm here for the ride.
This is true.
Him telling me, Ali, shut up. I want to talk about that.
Because we only have half an hour of Gus time left. Mm-hmm. Perhaps we should move on to the main event.
Absolutely.
Jen suggested this for our second episode, because the first episode was just getting to know us. We hung out, we talked social media, we played games. But this time, Jen suggested that we go over something that I didn't know existed until Jen mentioned it, and that is Rafe's original pilot for
the first
episode. So I think I perused it for about 5 seconds, and I was like, we're going to have some fun, and then we need more industry professionals to help us talk about this. So, of course, I think Gus were our first thoughts about this, so...
It's funny you say original, because based on looking at it, I bet it'd been in development for like several 4 years or so.
Yeah. Okay. I was like, what draft is this actually?
Yeah.
And you know, even just 45. Well, that's actually what I was going to start with, was asking you guys, because you know, right on the top, it's already got Sony in there. It's already got Red Eagle in there. And I was like, oh, this is deep. This is well into the process.
The amount of executive notes that have gone into that pilot.
But it doesn't have Rosamund yet, because Moiraine is explicitly described as short.
That's right. Okay, because I was like, in fact, there was one thing that he wrote in there that I was like, did he write that specifically so that Rosamund would say yes or something? There was something about it. But you're right, it does say she's short. And there was something else where I was like, oh, she would have been like, maybe not. Like, but there was enough strong stuff that she could read it and be like, yeah, I'm in. But you're right, it wasn't written for her. There was also something that he wrote that I was like, let's see, I wrote, this is written in, it says 2018, the date on it's 2018. It already says Sony. Where were they in the process? He'd already sold the idea to them, but Red Eagle is involved, which they had to be involved in the beginning. Mm-hmm. And so I said, was this the script that got them the green light is my question. Because I think what this is like, they're in development, they're probably going to do it, but they hadn't yet officially greenlit the show. And I was like, and this is this is kind of what I wanted to bring up in the beginning of it, which is like, what is, you know, like Ali and Gus and I know the process of like trying to get someone to bite. Mm-hmm. And it's the game of like, this is exactly like this thing that was super successful called Game of Thrones. Like, so there's sex in it and there's like kind of magic
blood
and then
blood.
Right, right. But it's also completely original. You've mm-hmm. never seen anything like this before, because we're going to pleasure the women. And it's not just about like sexual violence against women. It's the opposite of Game of Thrones. Yeah. And I was like, to me, it's like as a marketing, as a selling tool, like trying to get someone to buy.
What was that like, affectation to your voice just now?
as being Rafe, obviously.
your pitch voice.
Yeah, you know? It's your pitch voice.
That's how I pitch, man.
I misheard that and thought it was like pit voice, like a pit boss. I was like, what? And then no pitch. Oh. Right, okay. Yeah.
Everyone has a pitch voice. Everyone has a pitch voice where they're like, this is going to be. Because you have to make it like professional, but exciting. The because guy. You're storytelling, but also trying to sell something.
Yes. So it's both.
Some
it's really
call it
natural.
Voice. No, depends on what you're going for.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. It becomes this, you snap into it. Like,
you fall right into it.
This meets this, but it's also got its own spin. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
in
exactly
a world
like everything you've
where
seen
there's
before.
Magic.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That.
No, it's exactly that. And
let me paint a picture for you.
Let me paint a picture.
Yeah. Sit down. Get comfy.
Here's my elevator pitch. Yeah. It's a lot.
Imagine a woman. Who's stressed out?
Oh.
Maybe
so
she's short. We'll find out.
And then Jen, a struggling writer in her 20s, and you're like, I can't.
Yes. Yes.
Wow. But I did not know there was such a thing writer. As a pitch voice. I'm learning so much today.
Well, there can be.
When David and I teach pitching classes, which we did for a long time, like our pitching seminars or whatever, you know, we always like your executives like to be told a bedtime story. Like they want to be entertained. They want to be told the story in a way that holds their attention, but also so that they can actually like switch over to their phone for a minute and kind of ignore you and then still catch back up. And I'm not bagging on executives. I'm just like, everybody's really busy in this town and you're just like, you've got to keep them engaged, but also respect that they don't want to hear a story for an hour and a half. Make it quick.
They're busy people. Part of it.
Well, there was a while where you were reading, 10 scripts a day or something like that?
Yeah. It was a lot. It was good for me. It was good for me to read that much, but it's a lot of scripts. And many of them are respectfully the same. That's why I was if I read one more
by the
struggling
way,
writer in their 20s,
that's not a bad thing that all the scripts are the same, because there are only like 7 stories that have ever existed. And we're just apropos for the Wheel of Time. We're just kind of telling them all again and again, but differently with our own perspective and human voice behind them. So,
you can feel the like executive notes and the Game of Thrones just came out. Everyone's looking for their version of that. That's what's popping around in all the executive meetings. Mm-hmm. Is like, where's our? Because every time there's a like hit show that's out, right? Like the last time I was in an executive meeting, it was The Bear. Like everyone was like, "Where's our The Bear? We want our The Bear." Yeah. So you can feel like what the where's our is in this moment.
I feel like. Even now, Game of Thrones still kind of has that shadow, because people are calling Shogun, it's like Game of Thrones, but in Japan.
In China or in Japan.
I feel like the people who were working on it are like, no, it's more like Succession, but the media and the publicity is like, no, my God, you guys remember how Game of Thrones had swords and blood?
Right. Right. It does. That shadow for sure hasn't left, but it's also, it's the same way. Okay. And Allie and Megan, this is for you and Gus for you too. But in preschool, that shadow is a big, large shadow cast by a little blue dog.
Yep.
Oh my God. Yep.
Make it bluey.
Make it, but
it's valid and it's fair because it is the best thing ever written in the history of television.
It's true. Bluey is the best show in the world.
And you don't have to be a kid to enjoy it.
Yeah.
It's just good.
We were at a
Jen
wedding.
Can attest, I don't cry in anything. I cry in Bluey.
Routine.
I have no idea what
body sobs. Rob, you don't understand.
I think we've just discovered who the third wheel is this week.
Australian children's show, and it's about a little blue.
Wait, I live in New Zealand. How do I not know this show?
I don't know.
It's on Disney Plus.
The episodes are like 10 minutes long.
Seven
minutes long.
Wow.
They make you cry. They're beautiful.
When I have a bad day, I come home and I put Bluey on.
Yeah, I know when I get home from work. What's
our mom has said
mom and dad,
that
if you're listening,
when she loses her mind and like when she's old in the home, she says, just turn on Bluey and I'll be happy.
Just put on a DVD of Bluey and she'll be fine. Yeah. But and our dad too. Like I think mom and dad are both listening today actually. And so if you are, you'll appreciate this. But when I was starting to make when I created Little Ellen, the show Little Ellen, which is a preschool show, dad kept saying, Can you just make it? It's dad's voice. That's what I was doing. Can you just make it like Bluey? I was like, No, Dad, I can't make it like Bluey. It's a different show. And nobody can make Bluey.
Nobody can make Bluey special. It's perfect. It's lightning in a bottle. But I think the thing that's really funny about that is like, I don't know if this happens to you. I'm sure it does. I'm sure it happens to you more than it happens to me. But they'll be like, make it Bluey. Right. And then you do that. And then they go, what's going on? You know, and then you go, well, Bluey did it. And they go, yeah, but that's Bluey.
Yes. Yes. They can do that on Bluey. They could get away with it.
Bluey can do anything it wants.
I know. I know. It's true. So, well, okay. So this is Rafe trying to find Bluey to me with like reading the pilot is like, and it's nothing against the pilot. And it's also shocking. Clearly this is way down the line because so much of what's in here ended up on the screen. Mm-hmm. So this clearly is not the first pass he took at it. Like it's not the first, not to say that he wouldn't knock it out of the park in the first pass, but it's clearly been through enough. He's created enough agreement around this story that is what they're going to make and what they did make. Mm-hmm. But you're also like, you're chasing the Bluey of it. You're really, I think that's a new phrase that we need to use. Chasing the Bluey.
Chasing the Bluey. The Bluey. Right. Yeah, that is, that definitely is what that feels like. Yeah. And I think one of the biggest changes that I noticed that I actually, and I know a lot of people had, were kind of like, where was it until this season, was the cut where they got rid of that whole opening scene of her, you know, yelling about the dragon reborn and that the dragon had come. And I had a couple, and I'm sure you have thoughts about this. I had a few thoughts about why that ended up being cut. And I think I agree with it, but yeah, Jen, why do you feel like they made that big cut?
Well, I thought it was funny because I was like, I had read this ages ago and sort of forgotten, like I read it before season two, I think. And then in rereading it for this, I was like, oh yeah, they did bring that scene back in season two. And then I was like, wait, no, it must've been in season one. And then I went back and I was like, no, it was in season two. It just wasn't season two. They saved it for like an entire year, however many years, which is amazing. But I think, and I also like that they changed the tone of it because the ending of that scene. So Megan, you haven't read it yet, but the ending of the scene of Gitara says, the dragon is born, Moraine, you have to find him and kill him. And I feel like that was the mystery they were setting up in season one. Instead of who's going to be the dragon, the mystery was, is Moraine going to kill him when she finds him or her?
And the mystery is very important. Because you want something, some kind of question, like a plot or story question that's going to make you want to keep watching, especially during those like very exposition-y bits that are inevitable in fantasy. You want something that's going to keep you going. You know, who's going to be the person on the throne in Game of Thrones is the mystery that keeps that show going and keeps you engaged and keeps you watching and keeps you through all of that stuff where it's like, so-and-so of how so-and-so, where my mom would be like, I'm asleep. I missed that. I don't care.
Is anybody on the chair yet? No. All right, let's keep going.
Yeah. Whereas my mom watched the pilot of Wheel of Time and was like, Layla's the dragon reborn. Like that's what she decided. She was like, it's Layla.
For a minute. She thought that for about, you know, minutes.
Until Layla
died. She was like, oh my God.
And then she was shaken by Layla's death. She was really surprised. So, I feel like they cut that in part because it took really long to get to the inciting incident with that scene in there.
Yeah.
Which, is, you know, especially in a pilot, you don't want to meander too long before you get to the kind of why we're here and like get into that click in moment. So there was that. And then also having a time jump in a pilot is hard.
Right.
Because time jumps are really difficult because you kind of like get introduced to the stakes of a place and the like characters in a place. I mean, think of like House of the Dragon. Some people were like,
I was just about to talk about that. Yeah.
Because you fall for the actors that are in that moment and you fall for the stakes of that moment. You get sucked in by that. And then all of a sudden you have to do that work all over again once you do a time jump of more than, if it's more than like.
It was like four episodes in, I think, too, for House of the Dragon, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And so, so
I also hard. And I also think that it was, I feel like there was a little bit of Rafe trying to say, hey, the ageless thing is going to be hard to do. But if we show Moraine here and we show her 20 years later and she basically looks the same, then like I'm honoring the books in that sense.
Right.
But I think for anybody who didn't know the books going in, it would have been like, what do you mean 20 years later? She looks the same. What the fuck is going on? Like, it's just, I think it would have been a really, I think it would have been a confusing
thing
to
wrap your head around.
Yeah.
And to bring in new viewers to that. To that element until it kind of like gets explained later on. And it's great in season two when she's like, you've been gone for decades. And we're like, what? And then we see the scene with Katara and we see her saying like being looking almost the same. Like it's, you know, so her and Swan. So it's great. Yeah. I think it was a nice choice to leave it and to take it out. And I agree. I think it was way too convoluted and slow to get in. Frankly, the same way the actual prologue to The Eye of the World is.
Yeah. Oh, that's really disjointing, isn't it? You know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like it's tough. You're like, who are these people? What's happening? Wait, now they're gone.
Yeah. And then
you can always tell people to, when they pick up the books, skip the prologue.
Yeah.
It won't make a difference. You know? Yeah.
I got stuck in it for a while when I first started in 97 in the seventh grade. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Plus they've already done it. So
and Winter's Dragon. We didn't mind Winter's Dragon.
Oh my god, Winter's Dragon is there's like a huge gap between it as well. So it's almost it's just like the prologue.
Just point everyone to that. Yeah, that's exactly how that happened. I think that's also why they didn't go there, is it's like we're gonna introduce the audience to the stakes of this particular place and this particular world and these actors who we will then shelve. Mm-hmm. For a very long time. And it's like these moments in storytelling are so, and I don't have to tell Jen this. I always feel so silly when I'm talking to Jen, like, oh, like I'm telling Jen, who has a much more illustrious career than me. But like, you know, those precious moments are at those, you have 60 minutes to tell a story, if that. And, you know, they get a few more minutes because streaming, you know, some, there's a little more allowance, but, it's hard to waste it and our precious audience attention on something that they're not going to understand. People get very mad when they don't understand things.
And the choices, like, they do. And also, like, you know, just when they made the decision that the mystery was going to be who's the Dragon Reborn in season one, the mystery of season one, they also, the other thing that was nice was by taking out in the pilot, we actually had the scene with Rand and Tam, saying, like, there was a baby in the snow and I brought you home. Yeah. And so they took that out of the pilot to leave that mystery for, because that would have just told us all right there that it was Rand. They saved it for Blood Snow, and they showed us that story from the perspective of at the point of the baby, not at the point of Katara. Right. Because honestly, who cares if some old blind Aes Sedai in the middle of the tower tells us the story? Like, we didn't know her or care about her.
Right.
Yeah. And when they brought that scene back in season two, that's actually, the scene isn't about Katara. That's a scene about Swan and Moraine and their relationship and why they couldn't.
It's such a bookend to the end of that episode.
Well,
And as a kind of a metonym, it's about Rand's effect, destabilizing effect on everything.
Right.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Through Moraine and Swan's relationship.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Like how much both of them have had to give up for him at this point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, I did not even be aware of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's no idea.
And then you're kind of like, you ungrateful little shit. And then Rand acts this way, the way that he acts towards Moraine in the first season.
Oh, I'm my like, God.
You ungrateful little shit. Do you know? I haven't talked to my girlfriend in months for you, in maybe years for you. Like, absolutely not. I would have ridden away from him too. It's like when you have I was a former teacher, so Meg and I know sometimes you have to distance yourself from a child for a second. You're like, I have to remember that this is a child. And not his fault. I got to walk away from the moment for a second, collect myself.
Right. it gives you that, you feel invested in them so much more seeing that scene. In the second season rather than seeing it in the beginning.
It's a great choice.
I think it was smart because at the end of the day, I think a lot of people are like, where was this, but we have to remember that we are not the people that they are writing this for. At the end of the day, they're writing this for new fans, to create new fans. Like, they're writing it from what I like to say is they're writing for my mother who has never engaged in fantasy beyond Game of Thrones, the show. Like, she has seen the show, and not only that, but then every day that Game of Thrones would come out after Game of Thrones, she'd call me and have me walk her through what happened. Like, I'm here for the blood and the gore, and I'm here for the shocks, but I don't understand any of the politics or the dynamics that are happening. And so I'd have to like walk her through and be like, okay, so remember this guy? Like,
are the blondes all related? Yes.
Yeah. And then like, okay, but now there's a new blonde.
This is not a knock on her, by the way.
Yeah.
No. It's confusing. It's yeah. They're incestuous and they all look alike. Yeah. I don't, it's confusing.
It took me watching the show to realize that Tyrion and Tywin were not the same person in the book. Because it really confused me in the book. I was like, wait, Tyrion, Tywin... I just thought they were the same person. I couldn't separate them in my mind because the names were so fucking similar.
Yeah. And I had like to all the Aes Sedai.
Yeah.
You guys have about similar names. Robert Jordan, I think, hated ADHD people and wanted them to have the hardest time reading these books.
Same, Darren, Saren.
We're in Night of Dreams right now, and I'll be vague, but there's a character named Mishima and a character named Mishima, and they're in the same plot.
I want to die. I want. And so, you know, Wraith has a hell of a task when it comes to just having to like give all of this exposition, especially because it's a really complicated thing being like, okay, so the world ended, but like not completely. Mm-hmm. And now it's going to end again, but in a good way, hopefully.
We brought it back, but like we didn't really bring it back. But like we're bringing it back, but maybe we won't bring it back.
Yeah, adapting books for film and television is truly one of my favorite things. Like I love, it's one of the things I love to write, and have done and sort of made a, you know, a process of that. But also, it's, I just love to break it down, you know. And just side note, a Three Body Problem dropped this week, and so Zach, my 14-year-old, has been reading started reading Three Body Problem when he was 12, and he's been obsessed with that book series, loves it. But he's been so nervous, and I'm like, you're not going to be a book club, Zach. You're going to be okay with changes. There's going to be changes. You're going to be okay. And he's like, no, I know. And he knows, cause he's invested a Wheel of Time. So he gets it and he understands why things have to change,
but he hasn't read it though.
Right. But he hasn't read it yet, but Three Body he's read, and it's so precious to him. And so we watched the pilot, and there was one thing he was really worried about that happened in the pilot. And he was like, okay, I think I'm okay with that. But they did a lot of the same thing of like having to really change some characters. I think they gender swapped a few characters, but they definitely like, the book is Chinese. Most of the main characters are Chinese in the book, and they're making this for a broader audience, and it's a more diverse cast. And I thought they made really strong choices in the beginning of that as well. It's not an easy task, and they're gonna get killed by book lovers who are gonna be like, "Nah, you can't do it."
I read that first book of that series like 10 years ago, and as I recall, it starts in the Cultural Revolution, and then you spend one chapter in the Cultural Revolution, and then it skips ahead like 50, 60 years.
Oh, hard.
And there's only like one character who carries through.
Oh, hard.
Yeah.
Second book introduces hard. All new characters. Yeah. Third book introduces two more brand new characters who are absolutely not visible in the first two books, but are integral to the story. And so
I should finish.
Series. It's great because in the series they're like, you can't bring in the Thomas Wade and wait until the third season or the fourth season or however many seasons we're gonna have. So they've introduced all those characters right in the first episode, and they've connected them in a way that they're sort of connected in the books, but like made it a little more organic. And I'm like, this is just everybody's way in. It's great. Yeah, it's brilliant.
Yeah, I think people forget, like, with TV, with book, for some reason I don't understand the hold that books seem to have over people in this way. Like I want to figure it out, because people will give it hundreds of pages before they put that book away. They will force themselves to finish it so that they can leave that Goodreads review and cross it off their list. Like Gus claims that you didn't actually read a book unless you finished it, so you like can't count it on as like towards your reading goal.
I said it can't count as a finished book on Goodreads.
I just didn't finish.
If you read 150 pages of a 700-page book, you can't count that as one completed book. You can count it as 150 pages on StoryGraph.
I gave it
100. But you can't count it as a completed book.
I watched Wheel of Time. You watched 10 minutes. Yeah, I watched Wheel of Time. No, you didn't.
Yeah, you did.
Oh, Ellie, you've read the entire Wheel of Time. You're on book 11.
I have precious minutes on this earth. Okay.
I say this, but I never finish video games. I get to the last boss, and then I go like, I'll do it later because I don't want to be done with it.
Right.
No.
Years to I never watch. Fought Calamity Ganon. Thank I never fought the final boss of Metroid Dread.
I mean, I do eventually do it, but I've been on the final boss of Tears of the Kingdom for like 9 months now.
Megan's now the third wheel. Megan is like, finishes everything instantly. She's like, I'm there, I'm done, it's done. Put it away.
Oh, we wait for years to watch certain shows' finales. Like, if we really like a show, we just like don't watch the finale for like 3 years.
I still haven't
years.
Watched the last episode of Game of Thrones, but that's kind of by choice.
I've seen it. Fair. Wait, no, I haven't seen it either.
Yeah, I haven't seen it.
Well, yeah, we do this thing where when we love a show, we like never watch the finale. It's like
you
a weird thing about
Battle
us.
Yet.
This is like leaving 99,999 unread messages in your inbox, and it would kill me.
Oh, we do that too. We're those kind of people. We're really bad. Meg would be stressed out by us and how we live.
Megan's stressed out by me.
Meg is stressed out.
Yeah. So I think people forget though that there's the with TV. It's a matter of changing the channel. So it's like you have to grab people within. I mean, what people tell me is like the first 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. That's like can be long. It's like really, it's got to be like the first minute, and you just suck people in.
Even more with streaming, because I mean, when you had to do appointment television, you had at least blocked out. Okay, I can watch this from this time to this time. That's my only chance. So I should see if I like it or not. But now.
There's nothing else on at the same time that I want to watch instead. So,
I'm not doing anything else. But now it's like, well, I could be watching anything, playing anything, reading anything. So why am I going to do this thing that I don't enjoy?
And I don't know if I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even just getting them to look at something new is a whole ass task. And you're trying to convince in this kind of pilot, you're trying to convince all the people who are sitting on the money that this thing is going to make them that money back. And with fantasy stuff, that's going to be expensive as hell.
Yeah.
So it better be like, it better be something that they feel like, and that's why that comparison to Game of Thrones is so important. They want to feel like this is going to, they're sitting on a treasure trove right now. Mm-hmm. So I think that this opening scene, while like to us, this is like, you know, the thing that starts Moraine's journey, we kind of have to be thrust more into the middle of that forward momentum.
Mm-hmm. Starting us right on. I mean, and also like, it's a really bold, the new cold open, the new is so bold, like Maureen strapping on her, you know, putting on her, putting on her suspenders and like, who is this woman? Why is she dressed so amazingly? Where's she going? You know,
those
like
suspenders live in my head rent free forever.
Please. Yes. Yes. So it's so fantastic and such a, like a quick, like in and like does spark you enough. And it's Rosamund Pike. Like once they got Rosamund, they were like, we don't need anything else. We just need her to put some suspenders on and walk out the door.
Yeah, it's fine. Like, exposition, but it's so dramatic in a great way that you're like, I need to know what this woman is getting up to.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, really, really short.
Yes.
It's
really so important.
Short. Because like, I think until probably pretty late, this is just a guess, I have no evidence for this, but I feel like originally it started with the red Aja chasing the guy.
Yeah.
And then Moraine. And then like after some tests or something, they were like, we need to know a little bit more about what's going on. So they just filmed the thing of her getting ready and talking.
I have the same theory. Because it feels, because the Leandrin thing feels like a cold open. It feels like ever all the other cold opens that are slightly different. We don't know where and when they take place, whatever. It feels more like the rest of those.
Yes.
And it was a nice choice to add in that. So we see sort of the danger of what they do and also introducing Leandrin, who is the villain of seasons 1 and 2, really. But I also think that it was, I think they just were like, we need a bigger, stronger first hook.
I also felt the note of like, start with the protagonist, because otherwise we're going to latch onto Leandrin too hard.
Mm-hmm.
True.
And then
which we all have anyway. But.
Which, I mean, and her cheekbones are just magnetic.
Yeah.
You go fall into those cheekbones. But God. Yeah.
Honestly, having seen her on stage last weekend, I can attest to just her draw. Like, she is, although it was very weird, it was so bizarre seeing her dressed up like, you know, someone from New York in the 20s with that Italian American accent. It was like, why is Leandrin talking like this? Like, but she's just having seen her from like 15 feet away on stage. Like, she is, if she'd been this only thing in cold open, if we hadn't had Rosamund, we would have been like 10 times more obsessed as we currently are. So
yeah. I'm loving the conversations that have been happening lately in Hollywood around, like, you know, some people have to have faces that look like they don't know what an iPhone is.
Yes.
Like, we have to, we can't be all changing our face. Like, do what you want, do your thing, but we can't all be changing our face, because we do need to have some actors who look like they don't know what an iPhone is. Because otherwise, and I feel like Kate Fleetwood does have that face where it's, yes, like, oh yeah, mm-hmm, I believe that you do not know what an iPhone is.
Yeah,
yeah, I do believe that from you. And so yeah, I could imagine it'd be really weird to see her in like jeans and a sensible top.
Like, yeah. Yeah, like, thank God, it was so unusual, you know. I was like, Dominic West was on stage. I'm like, it kind of like, okay, I've seen Dominic West, it's fine, you know. Coincidentally, I watched 300 randomly that morning, and he's also in that, so it was like fun. Yeah, I knew he was in it, but I hadn't put the face to the name, and then I was right, like, what's the play about? And I googled, and because I go see these plays, and I'm like, I don't, like, I went and saw Medea, like, Hades Town, I have no idea what these plays are about. Like, there's a Wheel of Time actor in it, I'm gonna go see a stage show, like, why not? Yeah. I was like, I want to know one for a change. So I googled it, and I was like, oh shit, that's Dominic West, I know him. I was like, he's in movies, okay, cool. knowing so much, but from him it felt like, you know, okay, yeah, he's throwing out that accent, he's wearing those clothes, it looked totally normal. But I kept looking at Kate, I'm like, that's Mandarin, this is weird. You know.
Like, we watched last night Lisa Frankenstein.
Oh,
very fun movie.
I freaking loved it.
Very fun movie. But we got, I don't know, half an hour into it, and the guy who was playing her father showed up, and I went, that's the dad from Stranger Things. And he's right, playing the same character, and he has the same outfit and the same glasses.
And it's the 80s. And it's the 80s and 80s. And so it's like we just took Ted from, because that's what I constantly like to say from that show. I hope you're enjoying your chicken, Ted. And then he goes like, what I do? And it just cracks him up every time. He's always quoting that, yeah, that show. And so, but, like, he just like bopped into another universe, and it was so funny.
And that's kind of an example, Rob, of somebody going, rather than going, what else can we put this, what else can he do? They were like, he's great at this. Let's have him do this again.
Yeah. Let's have him do this exact same
thing. He can
part.
Deliver the hell out of that pizza.
Yeah.
It's the same thing as that script. It's the same thing as like trying to put this, people are comfortable with you being in the 80s. They'll be okay with that. They'll be good. Yeah. They'll feel safe. Yeah.
Yeah. Once they can put you in some kind of box of like, people like watching you do X, they will make you do that same thing over and over and over again. Cause they're like, this is a guarantee. We've got her for this. We know that this works. But yeah, I'm interested too. One of the more controversial things that they did in this pilot, right, is give Matt a bit of a more difficult backstory. A lot of people are very justice for Natty and Abel Coffin in a way where I was like, none of you have ever showed up for them in the Grindelwald Cup. Ever. Yeah.
I love what they did to them in the pilot. I'm like, this feels like a real family. I'm sorry. Yeah. Like, you know, rather than his perfect family and his, you know, mom and dad for all the kids and all that sort of shit, or they're an orphan, so it doesn't matter. And it's like, no, I love the fact that, you know, she's a traumatized alcoholic and he's a scoundrel, and, you know, like, why not? People, you know, it gives Matt so much to his character. It's ridiculous. Like, I don't know. I think
it makes his journey with the dagger, like, a little more forgiving, instead of just being a stupid brat who had to steal something from the treasure, you know? Like,
it makes just hate him less when he does that.
It does. It makes him, and it gives him like we've seen just the beginning of that journey, but, you know, seeing him in the nice clothes in Nynaeve's testing, you know, and seeing him come up as Lord Matt, like, it, we now care how he's going to get there. He's not just a spoiled brat. I mean, there's so little distinction between Matt and Perrin in some ways in the beginning. I mean, they're very different characters, but in the books, they're all from these like nice, happy farm families and just, you know, going off doing their thing.
Yeah, and he's a big guy, and he's a little guy. And
the big guy and the little guy.
Originally, there was a fourth guy, but then Harriet was like, get rid of the fourth guy.
Then we don't need a fourth guy.
Too many guys.
Which, thank you, Harriet, for me personally, because that was a lot of people to keep track of in the beginning.
if people who are listening don't know, Jordan had planned for there to be a fourth Tavirin, whose story would have started around book 5. And Harriet said, absolutely the fuck not.
Thank you for that. But I think it grounds him a lot more as a character. All of that, like, am I a hero stuff now becomes, because we always get the, refrain, which I think is a really smart framing device for him as his character grows, the refrain of "you're a prick just like your father," mm-hmm. right? And that's what we understand too, then his like deep core wound as a character, which is yeah. really important to understand, and his like internal fears and his internal monologue,
which is also kind of like an inverted view on "I'm no bloody hero." I feel yeah. like the same statement, it just comes from a different place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're yep. a prick. I'm no hero. Either yep. way.
I feel like "I'm no hero" is going to definitely grow from that.
Yeah.
Right. right? Mm-hmm. And I feel like later, I mean, spoilers, are we allowed to talk about the whole show?
Yeah.
Other
yeah,
than yeah. up to Knife of Dreams for you.
Yeah.
I mean, no one's talking about it. He, you know, he blows the horn, and I saw some people going, "Oh, well, what about his arc now?" And I was like, then he immediately accidentally stabs Rand.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. He's got plenty of room.
We're going to turn that really fast. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we can't allow him to be on a high for too long, right? Yeah. Because we have a whole show to do.
Right.
That's what we did with Nine Eve in season one. She was on a mm-hmm. high for a minute. Now she's not.
Yeah, right. And like I think yeah. it's why we gave Nine Eve the backstory that she has, because now her desire to protect people is just constant and understandable, right? We don't have to really like delve. We don't have to have any exposition beyond the fact that she watched her parents die and couldn't do anything. Mm-hmm. Like, and now she'll be damned if she has to go through that again. Right. And so then of course that protectiveness and that like stubbornness and that anger all, I mean, it grounded Nine Eve from what could have been when you cast Zoe Robbins, which is angry Black woman, to like making that rooted in something real and deep and meaningful and understandable. Mm-hmm. And I think that was really important, especially once they cast Zoe Robbins, to do that. It wasn't just like, we have a Black woman and she's angry.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. For no reason. And then same thing with Perrin. I mean, talk about the most controversial decisions that this pilot made that I completely agree with. And I understand.
I know.
And the fridging thing. I do. And it is my least, one of my least favorite tropes. So like
we were also worried before the show dropped. We were like, they're fridging him. His wife.
Pilot?
They're doing it. Yeah. Like even before the, we all knew it was going to come. Yeah. We all thought it was happening. And yeah. we were so worried. And I agree with you. I'm like, yeah, that's the right call.
It was the right call because Perrin, my nightmare characters, and I've been trying to like challenge myself a lot in my writing recently and have characters that don't talk so much. Like, cause I'm a chatty Cathy, obviously. And so my characters tend to be chatty Cathys, who like are really well-meaning and like really earnest and like, you know, are always, you know, like can-do kind of people. And I started to kind of be like, let's try to write characters that maybe don't use their communication skills and are not, and it's so hard. Like they're, for me anyway, that's like the hardest character to write is somebody who is so internal, because then you have to really figure out a way to externalize their journey in a way that we're going to understand without like making them say
having a monologue in their head.
Exactly. And voiceover never works. I mean, it does. Mm. Right. It does.
If you narrate it, it can, but not like often. It's cheating.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's cheating, and if you do it, then you have to do it for everybody. And that doesn't work. So in this, where there's multiple POVs, then you have to do it for everybody. So I think it was really smart because they needed to have something that made us understand that relationship to violence.
Right.
While we're talking real quick, sorry to interrupt. I have to run. I have to go rehearse for this.
Which I'm going to see.
You're
going to
see it.
Yay.
Love you all. You're all amazing. I have a play to rehearse. Bye.
Okay.
Bye. Thank you guys.
Bye guys. Thank you guys.
Bye guys.
Yeah. Anyway, externalizing his stuff. So now when he looks at a hammer and he looks at an axe, we get it.
Yeah.
That's exactly it. He's the brooding character who doesn't speak much. And the funny thing is, in the books, you don't actually get that many Perrin point of views earlier. You know, like it takes a while. You're a few books in before we start to get the Perrin point of views. And,
right.
and it, or many of them. And so, like, he's just this brooding guy. And it does, it deepens that. It gives him a reason that we can all just, like, look at him and be like, yeah, you got some trauma. We get it. You don't have to tell us about it.
What they've done is they've taken all of these journeys, these emotional journeys that the characters kind of go on a little bit later, and they've just made them happen earlier.
Yeah.
And you know, in the defense of the fridging in the show, I cannot believe that I'm coming out here and defending fridging, but here we are.
Perrin's got a lot of fridging in his plot line. He's got the Tinker Girl, and he's got that, like, his whole family, right? All the women in his family, and he's, you know, he's got a lot of that. And I feel like we just kind of took a lot of that, condensed it, and then moved it earlier so that it had more lasting plot significance.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah.
It's interesting too. Oh, go ahead. Go ahead, Rob.
Fridging is not, you know, it's shitty, but like, how else you do something like that, that effectively, that quickly? Like, it's so much harder I'm not defending it, but when you try and find an ulterior way to give you all of those things that you understand about a character in other ways, like, I struggle to think of ways that it's effective to mm-hmm. get that across, you know.
Because I had some people say, like, well, why not Master Luhan? And I was like, well, then you have to spend precious screen minutes establishing who they are to each other and why he matters.
Yeah.
Right? Like, a spouse is a very fast relationship. Mm-hmm. In. Mm-hmm. Like, everyone gets that is a deep and important relationship.
Yeah.
That, you know, someone would feel very awfully about hurting that person, and it would haunt them, and that would be a horrible thing.
Yep.
And I was like, the only thing I could think of that might be on the same level, but then, like, then you get into a different problem, is like a little brother. Mm-hmm. And I was like, a young brother, like, you know, not like similar age, like young brother. But I was like, and then you get into the, like, there are people who will turn stuff off if kids get in harm's way, right?
Yeah. And then you're in the Game of Thrones pilot and you're throwing Bran out the window. So, we already did that.
Oh, yep. And then you're the Game of Thrones pilot. And we have to be the same but different.
Yeah.
And,
I honestly think that was like a hook to grab people into the show that, like, hadn't read the books.
Mm-hmm.
But in Game of Thrones, you mean?
In Wheel of Time. Like, I feel like they were like, oh, I was not expecting that to happen.
Yeah.
And they were, like, more invested because of it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It was super shocking. And, you know, so going back into the pilot, too, like, there is one of the scenes that I think they did a nice job. They had to cut down what was happening during the, during Winter Night and during the Trolloc attack. But so they've got Egwene running into the forest to find Moraine, which, frankly, is just literal shoe leather. She's running into the forest and she almost gets killed by a Trolloc, and Lan saves her, and then Moraine comes back. And I'm like, where have you been, bitch? This whole thing has been going on for like 25 minutes. Why aren't you in town? Like, so it made us lose faith in Moraine because she's just hanging out in the woods letting Trollocs attack town.
Yeah.
And Egwene leaves Nynaeve and abandons her instead of being together the whole time to see Nynaeve ripped away. That was a really nice choice. But they also send Matt into the woods and he, like, yanks a branch off a tree and starts a bow staff. And part of me was like, yes, we're going to see him with a staff at the beginning. And then I was like, no, he's too heroic with it. Like, I'm not going to, you know, and it's, the point is, they are not heroes. They are blundering children who don't know what they're doing, any of them. And Moraine is the only one who can help them grow into the potential.
Yeah. They had to strike a really fine line, I think, between, like, showing those hints of heroism, that they have this in them, that there's hope for them to get there, right? You know, Matt going after his sisters when his parents.
I was thinking exactly that,
Which, by the way, they're still going to get a redemption arc during the Battle of Two Rivers, those two, or at least one or both of them, like, especially with Natty continuously coming up. Yes. Like, there's no way.
Channel at some point as well, right? I mean, at least one of them, if not both of them.
Both. The girls. Right? Bode channels later.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
Yeah, but him going after those two. Mm-hmm. You know, Nynaeve trying to save people and she can't, which we know is a big trigger for her. And, you know, them, like, not hiding. They're out there in the fight trying to help people. You know, Rand having that moment where he's saving his father. I mean, they're all getting a minute of okay, we can see that there is that potential there, but without giving them too much, because if there's too much hope for them right now, it's unbelievable that they'd have this much of a problem going forward. And then the show becomes uninteresting because we're like, well, of course they're going to win.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah. They're so good at what they do.
Yeah.
With no training. Yeah.
So, and that's also why I like the fact that Nynaeve got dragged off and they all died. Like, I thought that was a great choice as well, because, you know, we quickly see her with, you know, Lan and Moraine, but the others don't see her till much later. And you forget that by the time they're all back together, you're like, oh yeah, shit, they think she's died. And it's, you know, it gave until we saw was it the end of episode 3 where she's like got a knife to his throat or something. And then until you see that, you know, people who don't know the books and be like, well, there's no way they've got that even the first episode. Like, no one's doing that. Don't care what executive says what, no one's doing that.
Right.
If you haven't read the books, you know, you genuinely think, well, someone died. Like, someone who was made out to be a key character at the beginning has died in the first episode. So, again, Game of Thrones were different. So,
yeah. And the risks of that, like, because Moraine is clearly checking her out to see if she's the dragon in the beginning. Like, she's asking her, I mean, that whole pool cleaning scene, she's basically grilling her for the information that she wants. When you watch it back, it's like, you're how old? You know, she's trying to narrow down whether or not Nynaeve is the one and decides that she's not. But it's clear that because she's too old. But, you know, it's clear that was a consideration because especially, you know, she's so strong.
I think
it's interesting. That they had, you know, because they later have kind of like a Terminator moment with Nynaeve and the Trolloc in the next episode where we get to kind of next episode, I think, where we get to.
It's the third episode.
Yeah, we get to see how she got away. But I'm like, we got to keep in mind that was like a Terminator level effort for a Trolloc, one Trolloc. We're continuously upgrading our baddies in season 2 as they get stronger and better at things. But like, we got to start her off in a place of like, she had to basically go Terminator on one Trolloc.
So good.
So good.
So one thing that I always, now having read a little bit of this pilot, that I think is quite funny is people talk about like how much sex there is in Wheel of Time compared to the books. Like, firstly, there's plenty in the books. All right, let's be honest about that. It will just smash to black. They could smash off page. But having read some of this, and I'm at the beginning bit, so I'm on like page sort of like 13, 14. 15, where like Matt and Danya are getting it on. Like, this is
written. Yeah. Explicit. Fully out. And I was like, are you expecting us to actually see that on screen, right?
Yeah.
Like,
I haven't read the pilot, so
I want to read this out so like, they can
please.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Wait, so, mom and dad go away.
Yeah, mom and dad go away, yeah. It's the stables in the Two Rivers, the pitter-patter of rain on the thatched roof of the stables, horses stomping and neighing nervous, then a moan. Danya, yes. Camera moves through the darkness and we see two silhouettes against one of the walls. Danya's holding onto one of the ceiling beams with her strong arms, her legs wrapped around a man's shoulders. He's shirtless.
He's strong.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He's shirtless, head hidden beneath her skirt. And then there's a note, all sex scenes in 101 be focused on the pleasure of the women. Likewise, the female body should be seen as strong and in control in these scenes. Danya continued, oh, light. Yes, I'm close. Obviously, I'm not reading this as if I'm reading erotica, by the way, folks. Matt, I'm so close.
This is not a commercial.
He pulls back for a moment, moves the skirt to look up at her with his charming slanted smile, a beat then. Matt, Danya says, he grins, knowing exactly what he's doing when he says, oh, sorry, did you want me to keep going? You know, I can't hear much when I'm... She pushes his face back under her skirt and between her legs. Close up of her right hand, clenched in his hair, pushing. We see again the beautiful woven bracelet. And it just sort of carries on. Then she rides him. And then, you know, he basically stops her going down to her knees. Oh, we don't want you to get muddy knees. And so he can then steal the bracelet is the end goal of that scene. But it's like so descriptive. I'm like.
So descriptive.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, and this is where I feel like he was like, this is not Game of Thrones, because he was like, we're focusing on all the sex scenes will be focused on the pleasure of the woman.
Yes.
And then the next one does as well, which is Egwene and Rand. And it's. You know, he's like, he's saying, because that was one of the big things people were talking about after Game of Thrones was just that it's like, it's all sexual violence against women. And it's like, there's almost no sex in the movies. It's in the films. It's not that except for incestuous sex. So, you know, there you go. So it's like, you know, he's like, we're going to do this in a little healthier way here, you know, and show a different perspective. So it's like, to me, this was like clearly him being like, you want Game of Thrones? Sure. But here's the better version. Like, here's, you know, this is like, let's not just perpetuate horrible things, which is great.
I love Charlie in chat. I hope you're putting an NSFW tag on this podcast. think I was that bad, was I? You know?
No.
Yeah. But I mean, I feel like this is very clearly that Game of Thrones effect. Yeah, like Jen said, it doesn't. The description that Rafe said, where he's like, we're going to focus on how strong the women are, we're going to center women in the sex scenes, like, it's not going to feel... Because, like, in Game of Thrones, even if they had the scene, like, she'd be naked. She's, yes. like, clearly still dressed, right? Like, there's no...
Yeah.
You know, yeah. there's yeah. none of that additional...
Yeah, he's the one that's topless, you know.
Yeah, yeah. yeah. he's the one... Yeah. yeah, he's the one that's topless. He's the gaze. Yeah. And so I it makes me trust, honestly, reading this made me trust Rafe even more with the with the show, because I was like, oh, he's really thinking very thoughtfully about like the impact of the decisions that he's making, even if it's like, you know, potential studio notes of like, let's make it as much like Game of Thrones as we can so we can right. sell this. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I think yeah, it's he's very thoughtful about the decisions that he's making with his casting, obviously, and also with this. I think it's yeah. it's really smart.
Yeah. And the other thing is, it's not just a sex scene for the sake of a sex scene. So right. we are establishing that Matt, like we know he's hard up for money, because I think this is after the Pad and Fane scene. I think mm-hmm. I'm not right. no, but it's after he's no. lost at dice anyway.
He lost, yeah. yeah, after he lost at dice. Yeah. yeah,
and so. You know, in the show, what we now see is we just have an insert shot, a close shot of Daniel's bracelet. And then later he's selling it to Pad and Fane. Right. So essentially they still smashed. It was just off screen, like you said. But in this scene, he is giving to her. He's pleasuring her. But then he like uses that in her distraction for the bracelet to fall off. But yeah. the last line of this scene is he looks down at the bracelet. He looks down at the golden bracelet for a long beat, then picks it up and slides it into his pocket. But he thinks about it. It's that moment where you're also like, he's so hard up for cash. He didn't just rip it off of her. He isn't just having sex with her to get the bracelet. He's also enjoying the sex of it. Like, you know, and then he thinks about it. Like, he takes a moment. He's like, do I really want to do this?
Yeah.
And then he does it. And it's just, you know, which we don't really see that moment on screen now in our pilot, but on the page here, I'm like, you just told me a ton about this guy,
about this character. Yeah, he also didn't let her reciprocate because he was going to take from her.
Yeah,
right. Yeah. It could easily have been a scene in which she's going down on him and he took the bracelet.
Yeah,
yeah.
It easily could have been that.
Absolutely. But like, yes. it's Game of Thrones, it would have been. Yeah, not.
Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly.
Absolutely.
It very easily could have been that, and there was very much an intention of like, we're not going to make her a victim. Necessarily, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Like, obviously, she's a victim of theft, but we're not going to like repeatedly yes. victimize this woman
yeah.
and keep her from like having yeah. some modicum of power in this situation. Like,
yeah.
it's there is a reciprocity that in his mind is like working.
yeah. Matt's justifying his theft.
He's justifying it. He's like, she had a good
he
time.
He earned it.
And like, yeah. And I like kind of earned it. And, you know, like, I'm not a complete asshole.
Right.
Because like, at least she got a good time out of being robbed.
Right. Being robbed.
So, yeah. I think that exactly. There's a lot being said about this character in like, in terms of he's got a code of things he will and won't do.
Yeah.
And that's important. I mean, we have to see some level of like essential goodness in these characters too.
Yeah.
If we're going to like root for them, because there's like people we want to watch because they're awful and we have a fascination with people who are awful, right? There's obviously, because one of the things that writers hate the most is like, make your characters more likable. They hate that note. Yeah, look, Jen just got triggered. yeah. There's a lot of discussion about that as a note. Like, make your characters more likable. Because what does that mean? Like, people are likable in different ways. And we don't need necessarily characters to be likable for us to watch them.
Yeah.
They need to be interesting. We will not forgive boring or annoying, but we will forgive a lot if they're interesting.
I mean, everyone loves a character that they can hate. Like, oh yeah. God, I hate them. What are they doing now? What are they doing next? Littlefinger in Game of Thrones. Like, I know certain people hated him, rightfully so. It's just like, nobody watched Littlefinger scenes to be like, oh, what, he's so clever. He's this, like, you're watching him with morbid fascination of how backstabbing and underhanded he is. and yeah. you just want to keep seeing what he's up to. He's not a likable character, but he's really interesting and engaging. So, like, I can imagine make them more likable being very, like, well, that's like saying, well, that was nice, wasn't it? You know, like.
Yeah, I mean, imagine you write the pilot of Succession and they go, oh, these characters aren't likable enough. Like, that's the point. You know, that's the point, is they're not likable.
Yeah.
But, you know, in order for us to root for them, right, and want them to succeed, right, because usually otherwise we're signing on for, like, the dumpster fire that will become their lives and their comeuppance and whatever that is.
Yeah.
If we want to root for them, we do have to see some level of essential goodness in these characters. Otherwise, we get mad when we're being told to root for somebody, but we don't like them. Yeah. That is true. But yeah, so in this particular instance, we're getting the sense that Matt is a likable person. We also have to see them be capable, which we get to see in this pilot as well. Like, they don't have to be fully capable and they shouldn't be fully capable, but they have to be somewhat, you know, if they're just a wet blanket crying the whole time, we're going to get bored.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No one's a wet blanket crying the whole time.
And frankly, they made Egwene more likable by staying with Nynaeve to fight as opposed to running off into the woods to get Maureen, which was a strange choice. I'm really glad they cut that.
That was
the one thing I was just like, no.
Is there a...
killing your darlings can be really helpful. Well, I'm sorry I interrupted you with that.
I was going to say, is there anything that's in this pilot that we're reading that you were like, oh God, I wish they'd left that in?
I kind of miss Senbui, but I understand why that was cut. I do kind of miss Senbui because he's just, in the books, he's such a ridiculous character that I enjoy him. But I get that they were like, we're going to hire this actor for like 2 seconds.
Yeah.
And then, and we're not going to remember him by the time we come back, probably.
Yeah.
Well, I do hear a rumor that there is Senbui in season 3.
I heard that rumor.
The one they had originally cast.
Really?
Well, no, I mean, wasn't that old guy that, like, Nynaeve tries to save originally cast as Senbui?
I don't know.
Well, yes, because in the pilot, she's trying to save Senbui. It's Senbui gets and she's dealing with a bunch of arrows because all the Trollocs are using arrows in the thing. And I'm like, does she know how to do an arrow? Because in season 2, we all had a little problem with the arrow and the leg
removal
situation. So, anyway. But this was. Yeah, it's Senbui, and they have a scene prior to that, Meg, that is like a moment where he's being Senbui and she's like, shut up, old man. And then later he was attacked and she's trying to save him when she gets dragged off. So I don't know. I know I did miss that a little bit too. The thing that I thought was cool was like this would never have shown up on the page or on the screen anywhere. This would never have shown up, but on the page in the script, except in one place where it was mislabeled, it says Perrin Ibarra's Forge, like interior or exterior Perrin Ibarra's Forge, and or the Ibarra Forge or something like that. What does it say? Yeah, Perrin Ibarra's Forge. At one place it says Joe Ibarra's Forge. And I was like, who's Joe?
Oh.
And like, was that supposed to be like his dad's forge? And he's but most of the time it's called Perrin's. And I'm like, to me, what that says is, yep, we decided not to put the Luhans in it. Perrin is a grown up. He is a grown ass man. And he and his wife run they're the blacksmiths for the town, period. End of story.
It's why I think they're going to give Natty the Elsbeth treatment.
Yeah.
I think that scene's going to become interesting because they've shown women now fighting. So it has a different impact, right? Mm-hmm. Because we're not doing the like women are defenseless thing as much, which thank God.
Yes.
Because,
right. Yeah.
You got to start Ellie's face. Women. For those of you who can't see Ellie's face right now, it's a face. Yeah. It's a mood.
Yeah.
I'm like, if they're trying to kill you, you're allowed to kill them. Like, please God. Anyway, I cannot believe that these books are making me advocate for the killing of women. Like, obviously that's something I'm against, but but some of these women, we got to kill them. Like, Jesus, get it together. Like, they're trying to kill you. Like, I don't know. And then they are like so guilty about it. I'm like, they tried to kill you. Anyway. So, I think that it may have a good turnabout if it's like, oh, these people that maybe we don't expect good things from, when we're talking about like who's a good person and who's not, and what's the difference, right? That like when the chips are down, they're able to to find that heroism within them, I think is a really strong potential choice on there. When we think they're going to run away like they did during the battle of Winter Night.
Yeah. Right.
Time.
Yeah.
Well, that's the same thing.
Well, no, see, that's the thing is like in the
I mean,
script, he calls
Winter
it Beltane.
It's like Beltane Eve.
Right. And Beltane is supposed to be the next day. Right. But in the script, they actually say like, Rand says to Tam, we should be at Beltane lighting a lantern.
Yeah.
When they're back at the farm. And I'm like, Beltane's tomorrow, Rand. You're wrong. Like my calendar dates to be accurate, please. And thank you.
But I think it was smart of them to use that as an opportunity to introduce us to the reincarnation bit.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was a slight change that they did where they were like, oh, it's to honor, you know, the reincarnation aspect. Yeah. And I was like, that's really smart because good use of real estate.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes these changes, it's because of real estate. It's like, we only have so much time and we have to figure out a way to do it as organically as we can.
And to drop it right in the first episode. Like, I mean, that's the thing is like, you know, the Jordan talks about how there was not a fantasy series at the time that he could find that had, at least in Western writing, that had spiral and circular time, like, you know, and reincarnation. And so not only like did Jordan bring it in, but then Rafe hired people in the writing room who had grown up with reincarnation as part of their culture. That's so awesome. That, you know, which I thought was such an amazing choice because he was like, it's more than just like, yeah, come back. It's like, how do you live your daily life like that? Which I thought was so brilliant. But to then bring that into it's in the symbol, it's in the name of the show, but how do you establish that at the very beginning of the show of like people are reincarnated? Like we kind of get that idea in the prologue of the books, but to just have the very first thing we do is see a ceremony that honors that was, you're right. It was like such a brilliant piece of world building that needed to happen in the first episode because it's the basis of the entire series.
It's the whole show. Yeah. Like there's some things we have to and can kick back, like how the magic works, which I was like, I mean, the ideal place for that is always going to be in the White Tower, right?
It makes so much sense to do that.
Because we talk about how, you know, you want to have one character that's like the novice in a situation so you can explain it to them because that's the audience stand-in. And that's like the easiest way to get exposition across in a way that feels organic because somebody naturally has to have somebody explain things to them. Because the worst case scenario is you explain something and someone goes, I know that already. Like, you're like, oh, you hear that sometimes and you go, oh God, they had no other choice. They had to do that somehow. But I think that was going to have to be explained later, but this core tenet of the show, which is like, we get multiple tries, but like, is that a good thing necessarily? Because like, we could just screw it up every time. I think it's awesome. And I did not know that he hired people in the writer's room that specifically have that kind of background. This is sad that it's like, this is really exceptional and extraordinary. Cause it's like, this should be the bar, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, if you're having that as a core tenet of your show, obviously there's more than one.
That's the thing too. And I don't remember if it's actually writers or if it was like consultants or writer's assistants or who it was, but it was like, someone who was deeply involved with the building of the show. And his reasoning was, you know, I can read enough about like what it means to like culturally like and religiously or whatever to believe in reincarnation. I want to know what it's like when you like, if you're brushing your teeth in the morning, but you know you're coming back, do you do that differently than someone who doesn't? Like, you know what I mean? Like, it was just like,
the details matter. I mean, that's what makes it's the universality and the specific, right? Everyone is always like, we need to find the universal, but we need to find the specific. It's both. And that's what makes it feel real and fleshed out and interesting is when we only have so much experience in our lives. We can only experience so much of the world. And it's always through our lens of like how we grew up and what we've done in our lives and stuff. And it's always important to have that diverse perspective. And that's like what's exciting about TV is you get to do that and like create with a bunch of people. So that's really cool and also so necessary. And I feel like we're entering into that phase where people are realizing how necessary that is. But it's amazing to me that he's like, I mean, in everyone he's hiring, he's being thoughtful.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
We could definitely, I think, talk about this for hours on end. But we do need to sadly wrap it up. So I think it might be time for our game.
Great. I'm going to grab one more LaCroix. Can I have 2 seconds?
Yes, absolutely.
Yes.
Ali has, are we sticking with the 5 captains now that we're down to 4 captains?
Yeah, I think we should. And then we just don't do, maybe we don't do it to Rami.
Or we can pretend that Gus is a Tiralde and we can just tell him when he's supposed to drink.
Yeah.
Even though he's not here.
Gus owes us drinks.
Ali just drinks for both her and Gus.
Yeah. Oh, that's not a problem. Actually, maybe I was
We only do a couple rounds, Ali. Only do three rounds.
Yeah, we do three rounds. Just three rounds. So,
wait, where did I put?
I'm sure you've played Never Have I Ever, Ali.
Okay. Yes.
But the idea behind this is we play it as if we're characters from the books.
I love it.
So we're going to play as great captains, because there was 5 of us, but Gus obviously has got to go and rehearse. So now you're double parked, double fisting, whatever appropriate phrase it is, wherever you are in the world.
It's giving hydrated.
Yes. Yeah, you're double hydrating. There we go. So who's everyone? Ali, you're the guest. Who do you want to be as a great captain? Gus can be Esmeralda. And then we can just say whether Gus owes a drink or not.
Bashir, Gareth Bryn.
I definitely want to be Bashir.
Great.
Okay.
All right, there we go.
That's cool. And then... do we want to do Gus too?
Yeah. Do you want us to give you as Gus somebody that you know rather than like that?
Well, because like Rodell, I know, but I don't know him super well. So I feel like he's the only one that I feel like I would be bad at.
I'm happy to be Rodell.
Right. You can be Rodell. Yeah. So we can give Gus, we've got Egilmar,
Gareth Bryn, Egilmar,
and Pedro Niall.
It's Gus, Pedro, Niall. Is that what we're doing?
Can we do Bashir and Pedro Niall? Is that cool?
Yes. That's fun. I love this.
Meg, you choose next.
Wait, so who's left? Bryn.
Egilmar and Bryn.
Egilmar. I'll say Bryn.
Great.
Okay.
I will be the Lord of Faldara.
My favorite thing about Pedro Niall is finding out that he was assassinated at 90. Like, just.
You almost what was made the need? It.
There was unnecessary, like, exactly. I'm like, he's 90. Just, I mean, I don't advocate for forced retirement, obviously, but if the like choices are assassinate the elderly or force them into retirement, I think we all know which one he would have preferred.
Yeah, this is true. This is very true.
I was cracking up. Anyway,
Ali, improv, Never Have I Ever, and it can be anything.
Okay, Never Have I Ever. I'm Bashir right now.
Yes.
Never Have I Ever. And this is something other people have done.
But probably. Bashir hasn't.
Ideally, yeah.
Never have I ever gotten so into somebody that I chased her across a continent.
Why is it every time we play this game, I'm the one that's targeted?
That was actually on my list, Ali.
So last time for context, Ali, I think Jen had Never Have I Ever. What did you say, Jen?
Something.
Because mine was like been obsessed with the roll of a dice, and Meg was playing as Matt.
Oh, it was fought against 2 warders in training.
Yeah, 2 warders in training and beat them with her staff. Yeah.
Yes.
Meg had to drink twice in a row. Okay. Has Pedro chased someone? Has chased specifically? Did you say a woman or just been obsessed with someone?
Obsessed with someone and chase them across.
Obsessed
the country.
And chase them across the country. Words.
I think Aitralde would. I think he would have done that.
Yeah, I think Rodell did that. So Rodell was.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like Davram would have done that, but he doesn't need to chase Dira. She's already obsessed with him.
Exactly. And Agilmar definitely has not done that for sure.
Yeah.
Great. All right, Rob, are you going next? Meg, are you going next?
I think we're going clockwise in the.
Okay. Oh dear. Oh god. I got to think now. Never. Oh, okay. I've got one. Never have I ever encouraged a potential son-in-law to put his partner in her place when she needs it.
Wait. Never have I ever encouraged a son-in-law to put his partner in her place. Oh, okay.
Pretty sure that's for you, Bashir.
Yeah, that's for you, Bashir.
I also feel like Pedro Nile would have done that also.
Yeah, you drink from us.
That's why I was like trying to pick one that fit both of them. I was like, oh, where am I going?
I feel like Pedro Nile would have done that. He gives toxic father-in-law to me.
Yeah, for sure.
Never have I ever dominated a woman. Well, no shit, I have. Fuck. I don't know.
There's going to be a lot of bleeps in this one.
I feel like with Davram, she dominates him. He definitely has.
For sure.
I feel like Deira dominates him. No.
No, but she likes to be dominated as well.
Okay, valid.
Yeah,
valid.
I say there are a pair of switches out there. Come on.
I take my drink back. I took a drink as Agomar, and then I was like, wait a minute. Women are like pedestaled in Shinar.
Yeah.
And they're close enough to Malkyrie and the whole
I don't think Rodel's drinking for that either. Sorry.
No.
I felt like Pedro Nile would do that because
I was saying at first because I was like, Bryn would never do that to Morghese, but he definitely did it to Suwan. So then I fucked myself.
You're screwed. You're screwed. All right. Let's see. Never have I ever gone into battle against totally underhanded against all odds and come out as a victor. So that's an easy
never
one.
Have I ever
sweet.
Isn't that all of us?
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's why we're great captains.
Well,
is it my turn?
Yeah, yes. We'll go around a little bit more because
I'm having fun.
Yeah.
As long as you want me, I'm here. Never have I ever had both the Dragon Reborn and the Ommerlin suit nearly get assassinated while I did nothing. Right in front of me.
I feel like that's specific to one person.
I will be drinking for that.
That was targeted. Thank you
very much. I guess he's probably the only one, right? Yeah,
A call out.
Yeah. He pretty much abased himself pretty hard after that, too. He was like,
bad about it, but we're going to call him out anyway. Like, really lack security on that front.
Feeling bad about something does not make up for it having happened on your watch.
True.
It's true. Especially if you are a quote unquote great captain. Yeah. What's going on?
Yeah.
All right. So this one might be debatable, but I feel like I'm safe here for not drinking, but you can argue against me. Never have I ever been disrespectful to an Aes Sedai.
Oh.
Pedro Nile was drinking.
So was Gareth Bryn, for sure.
Yeah. Okay. Now, a question. Am I show Agomar or am I book Agomar? Because book Agomar, I would say.
I'd say both.
Really?
Both.
Just a big gin drink.
Definitely show Agomar. He's like, what are you doing here?
Yeah, we don't need you. Yeah, that's true.
Is Davram drinking? I can't remember him ever being disrespectful to an Aes Sedai.
No, I don't think Davram would drink.
I don't think so.
He's a respectful guy. Yeah. I feel like he gives I always cast him in my head as Gomez Adams.
Yes.
Right. That's not a bad shout, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. And Deira is Morticia.
That's a never saw that though.
She's statuesque. She's statuesque. And I just love a man who adores his wife like Davram adores her.
Yeah,
he does. And I just feel like he'd be like kissing up her arm and she'd be like, yes.
Yeah.
You know, I see it. I see it.
And she does raise children who like to, you know, cause pain and torture and stab people and, you know.
Yeah.
So Faeela's Wednesday.
Faeela's Wednesday. Oh, God. Yes. Just imagine when Grace says that she loves Faeel, would be like, when I say Adam's Faeel, I don't know if that's going to be a little bad.
I see it. She gives me a little bit of goth girl vibes. Like, yes.
Never have I ever talked smack to a queen. This is not just for one of you. This is for several of you.
I feel like
Pedro Nile for sure.
Yeah.
And Gareth Bryn probably too, yes.
Gareth Bryn? Morghese.
Yeah. And
I said Gareth Bryn, I'm drinking.
Yeah.
Does Daddy Dav drink?
Well, Daddy's his cousin.
Zenobia.
He would
niece.
Yeah. Like not talk smack about, talk smack to. Like smack tell a queen her business. And I would see him doing that for sure.
Yeah. To Zenobia.
Rodel, I don't think.
I don't think he doesn't really have queens, does he?
No, he has a king who he is devoted to.
Yeah. So yeah. No drink for Rodell. Okay. Fair
enough. I guess unless we count Grendel being in charge as a queen, but I don't know.
You're on thin ground there, I would say.
Yeah, I feel like that's a stretch. We're stretching.
A little bit of a stretch, yeah.
Yeah, we're doing yoga. We're stretching so hard.
Okay, we do have, and we do have a lot of people this time. So maybe if we don't have to necessarily go three rounds because
it's we can more. Just.
I'm having a very hard time thinking of things because I've drank so much.
Okay, so yours is never have I ever been unable to come up with an answer because I'm drinking too much. And now you drink because you have finally done that.
Because I have.
Yeah. And I feel like Rodell's definitely got that drug once in his life.
So. Davern would drink to that, yeah.
Agumar would not admit it in public, but private he's drinking.
Adrenal, though?
I feel like he's someone who's never had too much.
Yeah, I've never had so much that I'm not on my guard.
Yeah. I agree with that.
Yeah,
he's
intense.
He's like even on his big birthdays, he's like, I shall have a
sip of sherry,
and there's like a sip. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Or
yeah.
Some goat's milk.
Yeah, some spiced goat's milk. Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, something weird. Something where you're like, that's weird, Grandpa.
Birthday treat.
A birthday treat. Oh.
All right.
Wow. Allie, surprise, surprise. This is the longest episode we've ever done. You know?
This is an average podcast for us.
Right. Well, it's almost our average since we've only done two.
We've only done two.
I'm bringing up your average. I'm bringing up everyone's average. I try so hard not to be too chatty, but you all are too much fun. And so it's a difficult task to not be a chatty cat. But and also I freaking love talking about structure with Jen always. I always feel like such an idiot though talking in front of you because I'm like, but Jen knows more than me.
No. And like you said, you know, you've been in the executive shoes, which is like, you know how that game works of like what they're tailoring it to, what you're trying, all of the things that we're trying to nail down
together. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a challenge. It's honestly a miracle anything gets made. It's honestly.
I mean, from what you've shared today, I can believe that. I mean, I don't know about you, Meg, but it's half the time I've just sat here listening, like, this is really, like,
interesting it is,
to hear the other side of it. So,
yeah.
Yeah. I feel like I've been a lot quieter today than I would normally be on a podcast.
Well, Ali's right. She and I go on. We could go on. Text threads about such things as well.
That's fine. We like the expert discussion. So thank you for joining us.
Everything is our text vents about all the things. But yeah, thank you so much. I know you're trying to get rid of me.
No,
we're not. We have two little ending tiny things that we do. The first one we're gonna do is we have to decide which among us was there's four or five of us today, depending on what you're looking, but we have to figure out which one of us was the third wheel this week.
Right, yes.
I feel like there's a couple candidates.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right? I mean,
me.
Well, Rob's never seen Bluey.
Right? Yep.
True.
Yeah.
Yes.
You're third wheeling on that one for sure.
Which is shocking. And now your homework is by next episode, you need to have seen it.
Mm-hmm.
And like more than one episode.
We're not
more than one episode?
We're not. Yeah. Yes. Because there's 7 minutes. You can do a couple in a row.
About 14 minutes of my life for this?
Yes.
You will give up more than 14 minutes of your life.
And you will
onesies
extend your
a very
life.
Good episode to get. Oh my God. Onesies makes me just sob. Like
onesies?
Camping for me. It's camping. I can't with the Jean-Luc, with that kid.
And Baby Race.
Is this Jean-Luc as in Jean-Luc Picard or just this someone called Jean-Luc?
No, that's just his name. Maybe.
He's a Labrador.
He's a Labrador. Okay. Now we're going to say which Bluey episodes made us cry. So camping screwed me up. Oh, is Onesies the one where it's like maybe she saw something you wanted? Oh, no, Baby Race. That's Baby Race. That killed
Baby Race kills me.
Oh, Onesies. I just remembered which one that is. Oh, that's that. Anytime the parents apologize, that's also a
big
journey.
Play, they talk about Chili's estranged sister, and then Onesies brings it all together. And I was like, oh, my God.
In honor of this, I will on Thursday, I will find a way to watch a few Bluey episodes, and I will do a live tweet thread for it.
Yay!
So you can all enjoy
Look
it.
Look at how happy we are.
Yeah, and also because the episode comes out, this episode comes out on Wednesday, so then hopefully people will have heard this and be like maybe watching out for me doing a live Bluey tweet thread, which is
perfect.
Weird because I can't remember the last time I tweeted anything effectively more than just retweeting the Wheel of Time account or the Grimm World Cup currently. So
right, I'm so excited. This is great.
I want to be there while you watch some of that.
Do I need to like? Do I need to do reaction videos? Is that what it is? Like,
I know.
Live stream watching Bluey.
Watch,
like,
watch yourself sobbing.
I would watch you watch them like that. That mm-hmm. I don't usually go for like live reaction. I would do this one. I would watch this.
I'm like feeling like reaction videos to Bluey is a new thing that I think that's something that needs to be.
Oh Meg, what were you the third wheel about? You raised your hand. I forgot.
Oh, just not knowing anything about the industry.
Right. Oh. Yeah.
Valid.
I was also raising my hand for that, and then I remembered the Bluey comment, so I was just like, okay. But I was the third wheel last time as well because I wasn't wearing the same. I wasn't wearing
a Rob Christensen Rob Christensen shirt.
You are.
You're wearing Alpha. You are.
Yeah. So, yeah. I don't know.
I love it.
I love talking to people who don't know anything about the industry because I'm like, you know a piece that I don't.
Right. Which is like being able to be have fresh eyes for it.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Fresh eyes.
Yeah.
Fresh eyes.
All right.
So we'd like to end on something that we call Wada Positivity.
Oh.
And I do have something in mind, but if Rob or Meg or Allie have something positive that they would rather share, I can save mine for another week.
I had a small moment while I was in Bath that wasn't really for me, but apparently was more meaningful than I expected it to be.
Tell.
And it sounds really silly. It's very much connected to my life as a chef. We were getting some food before the play while we were in Bath. And all I was going to get was like some basic chicken nachos. Like, there's nothing fancy about it whatsoever. I'm not an overly huge fan of sour cream, especially on nachos. Like, I have sour cream in things, but with nachos, I'm like, I just want like some guac, some salsa, and, you know, just the cheese and whatever topping I've picked. Like, just that's fine. Jalapenos, whatever. But so I was ordering online, you know, all these online systems we invented during COVID. And I put in the message, you know, because she had a message. I was like, no sour cream, please. If possible, extra salsa. Totally okay if not possible, because I understand that sometimes the company you work for is a bit of a dick and they're like, if they were actually have to pay for it, like protect the GP or, you know, all those sorts of bits and pieces. I totally understand that.
It's often not you, it's the people above you.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So and then, you know, it turned up with, you know, no sour cream and extra salsa, and I was like, oh, brilliant, thank you, this is amazing. When I finished, we were leaving, I said, can you please tell the kitchen, thank you so much. I appreciate that they did that. And they were like, oh, you were the person that put that really, really nice. You made the chef's day. He's over the moon that someone asked so nicely for something like that. Like, he can't, like, he's never had someone do that. And I was like, well, okay, I am a chef, so I understand what it's like. And I, you know, that's why I wrote that. But I didn't think it would mean that much to said chef at the time. So like, that was that was a really positive thing, but I didn't do it to be like, hey, brighten your day. I just did it to be understanding of the situation they're in. And apparently it made
And not a jerk.
Yeah. And apparently it made their day. Right. So I was like, oh. Well,
and those are the moments that like you, how lovely that you followed up enough that they could follow back.
Right.
Because those are the moments you never know that you've actually impacted somebody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when you think about that, like, you had this amazing opportunity to find out how you impacted them, but like, what are all the times that you don't know?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it's just, it makes it, it's humbling to me.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, I have an effect on people that I have no idea I have an effect on. And it's important.
Every day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I made someone's day by asking nicely for extra salsa.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, you know, like, how simple a thing was that? And yeah, it kind of put me in a bit of like, you know, even though I understood exactly where that person was in terms of what they do and what they're required of, like what's required of them, it kind of like really put me in a high, like I didn't expect it to be something like that, and it, you know, to make their day. So yeah, that was really positive for both of us. So
it's the little things sometimes that really make a difference. Yeah.
I love
that. That's awesome. That's beautiful.
Yay. Little
positive. Yeah. I love that you end on positivity. That makes me so happy. Wait, do we all share one or is there just one at the end?
We usually just
share
do,
one if you want.
We usually just do one. We've done it twice. I have no
idea. Yeah, we say usually, yeah.
I kind of want to hear everybody.
Maybe we can make an allowance for guests can also do one, I suppose, yes. If you really yes. want yes. to.
I didn't have anything prepared. I was genuinely just like, now Meg go. Like, I just want
and that is why
today was a week where I don't really have anything positive to be honest. Other than the really good basil break, so
you made a really good Basil Gill though, and mm-hmm. you're so clever. I love that you came up with that. Like
no. I gotta give credit where credit is due. I had the lemon basil martini. I don't remember. I came up with something else, and Jen was like Basil Gill. I was like. Genius. This is why you are the writer.
Yeah, I was just like, Jen, are you a writer by any chance? Have you had to do a quick
I dabble. Hit?
I mean, the I way dabble. You've spoken today, I feel like you should do it for a living, Jen, you know, so.
Oh, thank you. Maybe I'll
give up the gutter cleaning. Okay, give up the gutter cleaning and the tarpaulin.
That's what I was doing. You know? That's what I was doing before I came in, was cleaning the gutters because of the rain coming out, actually.
I just always like, both. Y'all understand, I sit here and I'm like, Jen's talking to me. She's so cool.
Aww. Well, that was going to be my wand of positivity was the fact that like this, you know, like Megan and I came in and we were like, we're fans. Can we hang out with this creator content community? And both I have the two people who have been like so incredibly welcoming to me, but like both Rob, who like came to Megan and I at WalkCon and said like, hey, nice to meet you guys in person. I liked your song and you're fun and nice. Amazing. And let's chat and hang out. And then and Allie, who I was like, hi, Allie. You're really cool and famous, but like we're kind of it's the voice again. But we're writing on the same show, so can we kind of or we're writing for the same person? Can we be friends?
Yeah, I was so scared to be. We met in person. I was because I turned to Gus because I finally got to announce that I was writing for Rugrats, and then Jen messages me and it's like, I've known the showrunners forever, and like I write and I looked you up because of course we professionally stalk each other in this industry, and it's
that's
weird.
What we have to do. Yeah,
yeah, you show up and you're like, I know everything about you according to IMDb.
And if you haven't done it, people are like, wow, you're rude. That you didn't.
Yeah, no, is that, you can't. It's true. You have to be really cool about it. You can't be like, here's a list of your IMDb stuff, but you can't. You'd be like, oh yeah, like when you worked on that thing, and like you just kind of like slide it in, and cool, and it's awful. It's awful because it never feels like you did it cool. And so I looked you up, and I was like, some showrunner messaged me, and I know she wants to meet me, and I'm freaking out.
Aww.
So we both show up and we're both like freaking, like fangirling over each other.
Oh my
and
God. I
was
love
like,
it so
I am not important. Amazing. You are important. And she was like no, I'm no, not no, important. No. You are important. And we were like, well, who is important? Who is driving this?
Petey was driving it. Petey and Kyle. Yeah, Kyle was there, and my 10-year-old was there.
I did bring my dog because he was going through separation anxiety. We couldn't trust him. And then, of course, he was howling at any siren that passed, which I guess there was a nearby fire station. So I was like, I look terrible.
And Kyle was under the table behind us, right?
Yeah.
Wasn't he?
Wow.
Yeah. My 10-year-old was under the table because there was shade and he had his iPad or something. And
he was trying to play a game and there was too much sun. And so he got under the table and it was amazing. And it was the best introduction to you possible.
I love that.
And so we've been friends ever since. But that was the funniest thing was both of us showed up like nervous to meet the other person.
Yeah.
That is hilarious. That's brilliant. I love that.
Which is
so
probably
much.
More of a Hollywood story than you'll ever hear because. Yes. That is the truth of like in this industry is like you always feel like a poser. You feel like you're not enough. You feel like you're not doing enough. And yet other people are like, you've done so much. Thank you for taking time for me. And it's a lot of a mutual love fest and it sounds gross, but it's actually cool.
It's really cool. It's really cool when people show up and they're just like real people and they're like, I'm nervous. And you're like, oh, me too. I feel like. Yeah, I feel like so many people here, well, talking about the fact that you write it, it's so embarrassing. Like, there's like a weird, when you have success and your career is going, it's so embarrassing to talk about because you're like, I don't want to, you know, because
right.
There's always somebody like further ahead where you're like, oh, that person is what making it feels like. And then you talk to them and they go, oh no, I'm making it up all the time, and and that person is actually what making it looks like, and then you just kind of keep doing that.
Yeah,
I love this love fest. But for this particular moment, I must wind it down, sadly.
Yeah, my positive is I got invited to come speak, and you all seemed to have a good time.
Yes, okay, good. Wonderful time.
Because I was I always get nervous guesting on other people's stuff because I want to do a good job.
You'll have to come back again.
This is episode 2, so we're very early on.
Well, but I felt even more pressure because I was like, we got to start it off real good. You know, I'm your first guest ever. That's scary. Yes. But yeah, thank you so much for having me. And I'll let Rob wind us now.
We got there. Folks, I will no doubt cut a fair chunk of this recording out. But if you want to hear the full thing, you can get that by becoming a patron. And then you can watch us all live when Ali comes back and Gus comes back and whoever else we end up having on. You can come and hang out with us live when we record, and you can get the full access to the full episodes that I then chop down to release to the public. So you can do that and have some fun. But yeah, please share us around. We're starting to get out there on all the podcast apps now. I don't know if we're on Google Podcasts yet, although I hear that's dying. And I'm not sure, we should be on Apple fairly soon. But we're on Spotify.
We are on Audible.
We're on Audible?
We're on Audible.
Oh, that one always feels fancy for some reason. I never know why.
I know, it felt fancy when I found us on there.
Yeah, like, but it's actually who goes to Audible for podcasts? Like, seriously?
Apparently I do now.
I love that. Well, thank you for listening, folks. Please share us with all your wonderful Wheel of Time friends. And hopefully you now realize that you're not just the third wheel, because being a third wheel, like we said last time, is a great thing. And we will see you all next time. So, bye.
Bye. Bye. Once again, we've proven that even when you're the third wheel,
you can always find a place to fit in.
Join us next time.
On Three Wheeling.
On Three Wheeling.
On Freewheeling.